Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's Friday. It has made it to us. Thank God it's Friday. It's the 28th day of January. I almost said May. January 2022. I get that I could say 2021 and be like, yeah, you know, well, it's not that long. It hasn't been 2022 all that long. But May? There's nothing about the weather. There's nothing about life that feels like May right now. Anyway, I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It is not May. Well, you know what? It does feel like May Day a lot with all the communists that we have running in our government. So there is that. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for downloading, sharing, telling a friend. The growth we've experienced because of you is only because of you, and I owe you for that. So thank you for that. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Compliments, complaints, whatever you want, or you can post them online. You can go the SoundCloud if you want to. Nobody, every once in a while somebody posts a comment on SoundCloud. You can do that. I check them, and you but I really check the comments at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. It's reason alone to sign up there. $5 a month. The Weekend Evan Review will be live and lit tonight at midnight. You're not going to want to miss that. It's just damn fun. And you can make a love connection in the comment section. You can enter to win signed books, autographed books by people you heard of, people you know. Just a good time is had by all at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast for the price of $5 a month. For God's sakes, you spend more of that on the swill coffee crap from Starbucks or whatever non-Starbucks. Coffee's ridiculously expensive. I don't get it. It tastes like crap, but spare your body the caffeine and the mouth the crap taste and spend $5 a month at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Is that too much to ask? It is not. It is not. All right. I teased this yesterday. Let's get into it today. The big news for today is, of course, happened yesterday afternoon, I guess, when Justice Stephen Breyer didn't announce that he was retiring. Let's not tell you how, you know, you think, oh, Democrats, they're so nice. So many people, they're portrayed by the media. It's just so wonderful. They're jackasses. They're opportunists. They will run over you. You know, that old T-shirt, I'd walk all over you to see the who. If you don't know what that means, Google it. I had to Google it. But I get it. I'd walk all over you to see the who. That's the Democrats. It doesn't matter. They would absolutely, positively destroy anybody and anything that stands in their way. They don't give a damn. They don't have human decency. Stephen Breyer allegedly told the White House. Now, the Supreme Court justice, a Supreme Court justice, doesn't leave a message with somebody in the mailroom. They get through to, at a minimum, the chief of staff, but probably the president of the United States. And he wanted to give them a heads up. Hey, at the end of this term, which is June or July, he's going to retire. Now, Democrats have been browbeating him, attacking him, telling him, you got to retire now, we got to, oh, because they know that they're likely to lose the Senate next year. And if Breyer were to stay on till 2025 or 2024, they're likely to lose the presidency too with this clown up there. So they go, we need to replace this liberal with another liberal. Retire, Breyer, retire. And he'd resisted as best he could, but I suppose people chanting out in front of your house constantly that you gotta go is enough incentive for you to go, oh God, to hell with these people. Doesn't matter how loyal a servant he was. Doesn't matter. I think he's 82 years old or whatever it is. He seems like a spry 82-year-old. There's no reason to think he couldn't go on to be, you know, like a William Shatner. William Shatner's 90 years old. He just went to space. And his enthusiasm, his energy, you'd never know the guy was 90 years old. You'd think, you know, 75, certainly not a spring chicken, but you wouldn't think 90. Yet, there he is. He's managed to survive. And now, because they are desperate for some kind of victory, they tried to chase and successfully apparently have chased Stephen Breyer out of the Supreme Court. Now, he hasn't announced anything yet. and nothing is legally binding. I would love it if out of spite, because he called to give the White House a heads up, and the White House obviously leaked it. There are really only two people who could have leaked it, the president and the chief of staff. President and the chief of staff, that would be it. That would be who would be on the phone call with Justice Breyer. Which one of them did it? Well, the chief of staff is desperate to try and change the narrative for what's going on with the president and his failing, horribly embarrassing poll numbers. And it just is awful, awful performance so far as president of the United States. As chief of staff, you should be scrambling to find any way, shape, or form that you can make your boss look better. On the other hand, Joe Biden is senile. Joe Biden has a history of loose lips. We know, and we knew pretty soon after the bin Laden raid, that it was SEAL Team 6 that had killed Osama bin Laden. We know that not because of hard-nosed reporting and digging and, oh, the dogged pursuit of truth. No, we know that because Joe Biden blabbed it. Joe Biden told it was confident. It was classified information. If Joe Biden were a colonel in the military and had leaked that information, he likely would have faced court-martial. You know, he likely would have. But he was vice president of the United States and already sort of slipping. And they're like, oh, that's just Joe being Joe. And Barack Obama said, all right, we'll just let it be known. So the president can decide whether or not things are classified. Not that the retirement of a Supreme Court justice is classified. It's just a matter of human decency that if somebody is retiring, you let them announce it on their own terms. They've given you a heads up so you can get ready. Now, this is actually kind of evidence of political coordination between the court and the executive branch, which should be troubling to some people. You're calling to give a heads up that you're going to retire in a few months right before a midterm so that the administration can decide which is more advantageous to them politically. If they want to be at the ready in June or July with a nominee to plow forward to get through the nominating process inside of a month before the midterms, they'll be ready for that. Or they can strategize and war game it and say, well, if we want to wait, maybe this will be enough to motivate Democrats to vote for Democrats, to get them to come out. The biggest fear Democrats have right now is that the base of their party doesn't want to come out and vote for them. There's a, you know, the 20% of Democrats who will, you know, crawl over broken glass and will only ever vote for Democrats if they vote. You got to get them to the polls. You need them to the polls. And if they're looking around and they think Biden sucks, Biden's wildly unpopular, we're going to lose anyway. There's nothing worth fighting for. It doesn't matter. We're not going to get these little communist socialist bills through. They might go to hell with it. I'm not even going to bother to vote. Even if only 5% of that slice of people don't do that, that can be a difference maker in a lot of places. They need something to get them excited. This could be it. Now, it's not going to get them really very excited, not like Merrick Garland did. The fact that Merrick Garland excited anybody is a testament to just how boring some people's lives are and how pathetic their existences are. But the concept of Merrick Garland was something that was very appealing to the left. Why? Because he was nominated to replace Antonin Scalia, a stalwart conservative that would have upset the balance of the court. It would have thrown the court to the left, replacing a conservative with a lefty. Thank God for Mitch McConnell, all the people who whine about Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's so bad, he's so this, he's so that. No more Mitch McConnell. Merrick Garland would be sitting on the Supreme Court right now if Mitch McConnell were not in charge. He took all the slings and arrows. He happily took every single one of them, and he won. I don't care what Mitch McConnell does, or damn near don't care what Mitch McConnell does, because I'll be eternally grateful for what Mitch McConnell did. You should be too. And just remember how upset the left got and how rabid they got when Darth Vader Ginsburg passed away. They'd been badgering her during the Obama administration. Retire, 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 so we can do just basically what they want to do and what they've done apparently with Stephen Breyer. Retire, retire. She didn't do it. They're mad at her. There are a lot of people with Ruth Bader Ginsburg tramp stamps who went and had them laser removed because she wouldn't retire, and she died while Donald Trump was president of the United States, and they replaced her with Amy Coney Barrett. Oh, no, the horror, the horror. That moved the court to the right, and thank God for that. But Breyer being replaced by another radical leftist, look, if you look at the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Stephen Breyer, you don't even have to, if you're arguing a case before the Supreme Court, you don't have to make a case to them. Don't, you're not going to convince them. They're with you or against you based on the concept of your case. It doesn't matter. The rest of the court is who you have to try and get. That's what, you know, you sit there and you say, well, Clarence Thomas is a stalwart conservative, and Antonin Scalia was a right-wing. Those two disagreed a lot. Those two disagreed a lot on the interpretation of the Constitution. The leftists on the court never disagree at all. It's really bizarre how they just don't. I don't know why they bothered to show up. There was the controversy a couple of weeks ago where, like, oh, Nina Totenberg over at NPR said Sonia Sotomayor was very upset that Neil Gorsuch wouldn't wear a mask next to her and asked Chief Justice Roberts to do this. Why is she showing up? She knows how she's going to vote. First of all, they can do it via Zoom. Secondly, we already know how she's going to vote. What is she doing there? Who cares? She's wasting everybody's time. Let the justices who actually take their job seriously sit there and listen to the oral arguments and engage in discussion. Sonia Sotomayor doesn't give a damn about any of that. She might as well be sitting there knitting or something. Anyway, the the left is now a tizzy with speculation. There's a list of like five judges. They said, well, this will be who Biden will nominate. Reminder again, Stephen Breyer has not actually announced his retirement. Someone in the White House couldn't keep a secret. Someone in the White House was wildly undeserving of trust, violated that trust, and told the world, or told somebody who told the world, and it got out. Stephen Breyer could say, you know what, I'm not retiring yet. I think I still got another good year in me. That would infuriate the left, but these are people who deserve to be infuriated. These are bad people. And it would infuriate whichever one of those two jackholes in the White House, the president or the chief of staff, betrayed him. That being said, the speculation is running rampant that Joe Biden will keep a 2020 campaign pledge to be a sexist and a racist. Now, mind you, if you had a job, if you had a company that was looking to hire somebody, you're just creating a new job, if you placed an ad that said, now hiring chief technical officer, I'm only hiring Pakistani men, or Asian men, or Indian men, whatever it is, I'm only going to hire them, what would happen? Oh, there'd be outrage. There'd be disgust. You couldn't do that any more than you could say, I'm only hiring conservatives, registered conservatives, verifiable conservatives. You have to show me a long litany of accomplishments that show and prove that you're a conservative. You'd be lambasted for discrimination. You'd be sued immediately. If you said, I'm only hiring a white man, if you as a private company said, I'm only hiring a black man, you would be attacked for misogyny and racism, and you would be sued by the government. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, would come after you like a rabid spider monkey, and you know what, they should. But Joe Biden basically hanging that shingle out for the Supreme Court vacancy that may or may not come. I want you to listen to Joe back in 2020. During the campaign, we mocked it at the time because it's so stupid, so anti-American, so discriminatory, and so damaging to the eventual nominee that it was shocking that he made it. But then again, you got to remember that Joe Biden ultimately is a pander bear. It's all he does is pander. So listen to him back in 2020 when he was debating Bernie Sanders, when I think it was just the two of them.
I committed that if I'm elected president and have an opportunity to appoint someone to the courts, I'll appoint the first black woman to the courts. It's required that they have representation now. It's long overdue.
It's required. I didn't realize it was required. And I didn't realize it was long overdue. I didn't realize because there's no Asians on the court. And there never has been. Like, why don't they get representation? Well, because they're not a big enough voting bloc and they're not loyal enough to Democrats, so they don't get pandered to. Right there, what you heard is, and what Joe Biden is going to stick with, listen to Ginger Goebbels. Ginger Goebbels yesterday reiterated, after a little bit of back and forth and preamble, that Joe's going to stick to that. Joe's going to stick to that. He's going to nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court.
A lot of news out there today. So let me reiterate something that you heard the president say, and I also said over Twitter. It's always been the decision of any Supreme Court justice, if and when they decide to retire, how they want to announce it, and that remains the case today. So we are not going to have additional details. You are always welcome to ask any questions you like at any time, and there's a lot of news out there, but I just wanted to say that at the top. Josh, go ahead.
Thanks, Jen. Two subjects. So let's say, hypothetically, a Supreme Court justice was to retire and announce it on his or her own terms. Does President Biden plan to honor his pledge to nominate a black woman to the court?
Well, I've commented on this previously. The president has stated and reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court and certainly stands by that. For today, again, I'm just not going to be able to say anything about any specifics until, of course, Justice Breyer makes any announcement, should he decide to make an announcement.
God, they're just awful people. They're just awful people. But there she is reiterating. He will nominate a black woman. Now, he could have had two choices. He could have, you know, just stuck with his stupidity. I'm going to nominate a black woman no matter what. Come hell or high water, I don't care. Or he could have shut up and just nominated a black woman. Right? If you say, I'm going to nominate a black woman no matter what do you think? Everybody who... once the name is announced, you go, well, they were only nominated because they're a black woman. It's not racist to say. It's not sexist to say. It's repeating what the guy himself said. But if you just shut up, you weren't a racial panderer, a pathetic, senile old man, and you just nominated a black woman, guess what they would have said? Well, they picked the best candidate. They made it about race. They made it about gender. And now whoever they pick is basically going to be looking at like, don't worry, here you go. You're the best black woman we could come up with. Am I the best judge? Am I the best? Sure. Or yes. If no matter what the answer is, aren't you going to have that doubt in your mind? Aren't you going to have that doubt in your mind? You're going to have that doubt in your mind if you're that person, because that's human nature. Period. End of story. That's how the brain works. No. Don't worry. You're the best. Yeah, you guys are scum. Now, I want to explain why it is that I think, because this is going to be, I'm going to write about this probably for my Sunday column. You know, I'm brainstorming here, and that's sort of what the show is anyway, but it'll make sense because that's just how my brain storms. But you have this ridiculous mentality in some people on the right. Look, I'm all for a fight. You want to go ahead and slap around some leftists? Absolutely. I'm right there for you and with you. That's great. But there should be a purpose to it. Shouldn't there? Should there not be some kind of purpose to this, to whatever it is you're doing? If you're going to take a punch to the face, you should have a reason for it. If you're going to get punched in the face, if you're going to punch somebody in the face, you should have a reason for it. Far too many people don't. There are people who just love the fight. They don't even really want a solution. They don't want a resolution. They want the fight. Okay, you can have the fight. Buy a punching bag or something. Get a hobby. Find something better to do with your life. But they find a way to monetize it. It becomes a brand, and they're all like, this is my brand. I'll fight anybody, anywhere. Like, all right. There's a movie, Midnight in Paris. It's a Woody Allen movie, so it's controversial to talk about, but it's hilarious. It's a great movie. guy who, for reasons they never explain, travels through time when he's in Paris on vacation with his fiance and her family or something like that. And he goes back to the time when, like, Hemingway was in Paris and Fitzgerald was in Paris, all this stuff. And Hemingway comes in and he's like, and he chugs a beer and he just smashes down the ground. He goes, "Who wants to fight?" It's a hilarious scene. But it is a mentality, too, on the right and the left. These people, "I just want to fight him. I don't care who it is. I want to fight." Like, that's all well and good, but it's a lot like screaming racism at everything. Sooner or later, people just go, "All right, there he goes again. There we go." So he's arguing with an egg on Twitter, somebody who couldn't figure out how to upload an avatar photo. Their name is like Johnson 7483127G on Twitter. Like, they're really taking him to it. Or they'll just take one tweet. I've seen people do this. One tweet, and they'll tweet for like an hour on this one tweet from somebody that you don't know, you never heard of, and you'll never hear from again. There's a fight to be had, they're going to have it. Whereas I like to pick fights that matter. You want to burn some calories, you want to waste some energy, take some time and resources, time, money, energy. They're all finite. You want to burn yours on everything, go ahead. I choose to make it what matters. And when it comes to the Supreme Court, yes, the Supreme Court matters, but this is a fight Republicans can't win. Now, there's a caveat to all of this. I have to explain. There's a caveat. If Biden nominates somebody with just such an egregious history, or something comes up, they're a tax cheat, or they've beaten their wife or husband or whatever, you know, non-binary choice you make. They've beaten up people. If they spent some time and are suspected in a murder, whatever it is, if it's something really egregious, then sure. But them being then oppose them vocally and vehemently and try to convince a Democrat to come along with you, and then you can stop the nomination. But anything short of something that you can actually hook a Democrat for, whoever Joe Biden nominates is going to get through. The rules have changed. Harry Reid in 2014 nuked the filibuster for presidential appointments to the lower court, presidential appointments in general, and all the courts except the Supreme Court, meaning 50 votes plus one, the vice president breaking the tie. Democrats can ram their will through. Republicans changed the Supreme Court. Democrats engaged in that Jim Crow relic filibuster for the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, which was so stupid. Neil Gorsuch was a conservative replacing a conservative. It wasn't going to change the balance of the court. But Democrats had to pander to their base and go, "We're fighting everything to the nail." And so Republicans said, "All right, that rule change that you guys pushed through that we told you would come back to bite you in the ass has come back to bite you in the ass. And we're pushing it through for Supreme Court nominees too." And that was it. No, I don't know, maybe one Democrat has voted. I think Joe Manchin voted for a couple of Republican nominees to the Supreme Court from Donald Trump, but that was it. Democrats weren't interested. They fought tooth and nail, but they did it for show. They did it for fundraising purposes. And I understand that there's appeal to that. You can raise a lot of money by duping people into thinking that you're fighting the good fight, and if only they would donate some of their money, you could win this good fight, right? The good fight continues. Look, if you give $5 right now, we can stop Joe Biden's nominee for the Supreme Court. You can't. You can't. If you convince one Democrat to not do it and you hold every Republican, you can. But it's unlikely. It's unlikely. So I would propose that Republicans let it go. Unless, again, there's something absolutely egregious in there, you just let them go. You don't have to vote for them, but you don't have to be a complete jerk. Do a thorough vetting, do a thorough investigation to see if there's anything in there. But if they're just some radical leftist anti-American, draw some attention to it. Say, this is the type of person that Democrats nominate. Here's the speech she gave 2 years ago saying, "God, I hate this country. What an awful country." And then just move on. You're still not going to stop it. That wouldn't be enough to get a Democrat to go, "Well, I have to rethink things." So you're going to lose. What's the point in fighting a battle you're going to lose? Moreover, and it's not just why waste the time, there's a strategic reason for not fighting a battle you're going to lose. Democrats want this battle. Frankly, Democrats need this battle, if we're being honest. Democrats are desperately in need of this battle. Why? Because their base is demoralized. Their base is disinterested. Their base is wondering whether or not it's worth showing up to vote and feel betrayed by Democrats' failures. Even though, it's Manchin and Sinema who betrayed us, they feel betrayed by the whole party because they don't, they understand, I think, how our government works, but they don't respect how our government works. They still want to ram things through and get their way. So when that doesn't happen, they feel betrayed by the entire system and they don't want anything to do with it for a while. If you give them something to rally around, a flag to rally around, then they will have a hell of a lot more energy. They might get more engaged. Some of that negativity towards Joe Biden. Look, Joe Biden is fighting really hard to get the first black woman on the Supreme Court. To us, it doesn't matter. You look at it and go, was the person qualified? Will they respect the Constitution? That's it. Doesn't matter which bathroom they use or how they identify or what skin color they have. None of that matters. To them, nothing else matters. Since you can't stop the nomination unless you find something really egregious, just let it go. You let it go and you deflate all of the plans that they had. All the fundraising Republicans could do off of it, going, we're standing up to Joe Biden and it's garbage and you're just suckering people out of their money. And I get that's appealing. You could raise millions of dollars off of this. But so will Democrats. Democrats will raise millions of dollars off of it. Democrats will raise more money than Republicans off of it because the Democrat base that I told you is demoralized right now hasn't been opening their wallet as widely as they used to. A good old-fashioned Supreme Court fight, even if it won't change a damn thing about what's going on in the court, could cause those wallets to fly right wide open. Why give that to Democrats? Don't give that to Democrats. Deny them that. Just announce. If you meet with the person, hear them out. If they're not somebody you'd vote for, say, it's not somebody I'd vote for. But that's it. That's it. Don't go hog wild. Don't go crazy. Don't spend all your time on cable news going, oh, my God, this is horrible. And we have to stop this. And we must do this, that, and the other thing. Just go. No, it's a foregone conclusion. Let it go. Democrats won't know what to do with that. Democrats won't know how to respond to that. They're gearing up to either try and ram this through before the midterm elections so that they have something to celebrate and say, look what we did. We beat those Republicans. They fought tooth and nail and we beat them. Or there's a possibility that they want to wait until after the midterms in the hopes that, hey, that will inspire Democrat voters to come out and elect Democrats. Look, you've got to vote or else we won't be able to push through this nominee and Republicans will have a say. Either way, if you just stand back and go, all right, well, we're not going to have this fight. We can't win it. We're just going to move on. You disarm, you deflate all of that. All of that. Democrats won't know what to do. Democrats won't have anything to do, and it will be a win for the Republicans. If Republicans want to win, Republicans aren't known for thinking strategically, sadly, but I think that is the best way to go. Now, just to summarize, Joe Biden is going to nominate somebody who's terrible. Let's just be honest. He's going to nominate somebody who's terrible, and he's going to replace somebody who's terrible. Stephen Breyer is a terrible Supreme Court justice. So when you replace somebody who's terrible with somebody who's terrible, you have done absolutely nothing to the balance of the court. Nothing. Add to that the fact that there isn't a damn thing that Republicans can do to stop it. Not a damn thing. And you begin to see that maybe this isn't a fight worth having. Maybe you don't want to blow up yourself. Maybe you don't want to go into the middle of the intersection like that Buddhist monk and set yourself on fire, whatever that was, that famous photograph. Maybe this isn't the hill to die on. There are plenty of hills out there. This isn't the hill to die on. If Clarence Thomas decides to retire or something else, that's the hill to die on. Stephen Breyer going, eh, who cares? Democrats are counting on Republicans being Republicans. And their entire apparatus is set up around, you know, dealing with Republicans as Republicans. The media is all set to back them up in every way, shape, or form. And, ooh, the fight will go on, and we've got to do this, and we've got to do that. And you deny them all of that. And you just say, well, we'll hear them out. Might even vote for them. Don't know. Have to see. Be sane in the face of crazy expectations. And you watch how unbalanced your opponent gets and how quickly they get unbalanced and how they end up looking bad. This is about not a Supreme Court vacancy, a potential Supreme Court vacancy. Republicans have to be focused on the midterms, retaking the House and the Senate. You retake the Senate, it doesn't matter who steps down or passes away in the next 2 years. Republicans can, if they get, you know, it won't be that many, but if they manage to get 55 seats in the Senate this year, Joe Biden wouldn't be able to nominate anybody. Well, he would. He'd find somebody. They would send some left-wing nut job up there, and they'd be rejected, as they rightly should be. And then he'd have to send somebody up there who at least has a possible chance of being somewhat moderate. It changes the entire dynamic. But you have to position yourself to get in that spot. You can't just go into a room, start making demands, throwing elbows around and going, everybody needs to listen to me. I think we need to fight, 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 fight. Well, we've already lost. It doesn't matter. We've lost 5,000 men, General. Yeah, I know. But we're going to lose 5,000 more. But damn it, we're not going to cede anything easily to those commie bastards. Like, really? That's what you're going to... You've already lost. You admit that you lost. You have no tactical advantage whatsoever. And you're just going to keep throwing people at it. Resources at it. Why? A matter of principle. Well, if you can advance your principle more effectively by strategically making decisions and not just emotionally making decisions, shouldn't you do that? There are tactical reasons to say, well, the hell with it. Let him have her. Let him have whoever it is that he nominates. There are specific and numerous tactical reasons for that. We just, sadly, don't have a Republican Party that generally does that because they go, well, we can raise money off of this. Let's raise money off. Let's just raise money off of it. And we'll get out there and the more bombastic somebody is, the more they'll get on cable news. Oh, yes, well, I'll be more bombastic than that other guy who was just bombastic. Let's do this and watch my donations rise. Well, that's all well and good. You're going to get reelected and the cause you claim to care about is going to lose ground. You're in a red state. You're going to get reelected pretty much no matter what you do. This should be about, and this is the problem with politics, it should be about the overall picture. If you're a Republican in a red state who's going to win re-election and you're up in 2020, it's great to have a nice war chest, but do you need it? You probably don't need it any more than Maxine Waters needs to raise $5 million to get 80% of the vote. She's going to get 80% of the vote whether she raises $5 million or $5. You're going to win whether you raise $10 million or $10. But it's about those purple states that have Democrats in them. It's about Pennsylvania, where a Republican is retiring and you got to hold that seat. It's about those places. You disarm the left and their ability to have an absolute freak out and inspire their rabid base to come out and get excited about something. You take that all away. And you take away the fundraising that comes with that. And what do you have? You have a whole bunch of people standing around going, what just happened? We won, but that's not how we wanted to win. Because they're going to win anyway. That's the thing. Every Democrat will vote for whoever the nominee is. Kamala Harris will break that tie. You don't need a Republican to show up to work that day. If you want to protest, you want to do whatever, don't vote on final confirmation. There you go. That's how you do it. Deny them that, or just vote present. Don't vote yes or no. Just vote present. Let it go. Confuse the hell out of them. Passive resistance when violent conflict is expected. It will throw all the Democrats for a loop. It'll throw the media for a loop. Then they'll have to go through, because they'll have the script written, they'll go through the garbage, all these rabid Republicans, they just hate this woman because she's black or whatever. And then all the role that they have, all the things that people see are Republicans going, no, you know, I don't agree with her judicial philosophy, but I hope she does well. The contrast enough would be worth the cost of admission. I want to play you this audio from Anderson Cooper last night. He had on the majority whip in the House, James Clyburn, Democrat from South Carolina. Now, Joe, we made no mistake about it. Joe's going to nominate a black woman for the Supreme Court. He's quite proud of himself, as a matter of fact. If I'm the nominee, if I'm even, you know, if he calls me up and says, I'd like to nominate you, and I'm a black woman, I'd go, you know, I'll take the next one. Like, you're only, it doesn't matter what the qualifications are. Joe Biden said he's going to only nominate a black woman. So it's not like we got the best person for the job. He's got to say that. He will say that. But everybody will be sitting there going, you know, you've explicitly said that that's not your criteria. The best person for the job may well be a black woman, but you've set out a different criteria. If I'm that woman who gets picked, I'm going to go, I don't want that cloud over me. You know, forget it, dude. Just forget it. Because Joe's an idiot. But Anderson Cooper is an idiot, too. Because last night he asked James Clyburn. Now, surprisingly, Clyburn kind of smacked him down on this. He then went on to sort of explain why he thinks the Republicans should be on board anyway. But he did smack him down on this. Anderson Cooper wants to know, well, should Republicans basically vote for this Democrat nominee, whoever it is, because of the historic nature? Because if Joe Biden's going to nominate a black woman, therefore, shouldn't Republicans vote for a black woman just because she's a black woman? Clyburn, to his credit, kind of seems a little bit to recoil from this, going, dude, what the hell kind of racist crap is this? And to Clyburn, I would say, well, this is the kind of racist crap that your party engages in all the time. Just saying. But he doesn't care. He was surprised to hear it come from Anderson Cooper, because there are other ways to frame it. Well, if Republicans oppose this or person, blah, 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 blah. What does it say about their relationship or thoughts about black women? Or what? You could have phrased it another way instead of the way Anderson did. It's a very short clip, but listen to it.
Do Republicans have an obligation in your mind to endorse a history-making choice and not let it be only Democrats who vote yes for such a nomination?
Well, I wouldn't say they have an obligation to do that. I think it would be well for that to happen.
Do Republicans have an obligation to do that? She's a black woman, don't you? Isn't there a caveat in the oath of office to preserve, protect, defend the Constitution to the best of your ability, and to vote for the first black woman for the Supreme Court, no matter what her qualifications? And isn't that part of it? Maybe I'm misremembering from college what the Constitution actually says. Do you imagine being an adult and saying that? Don't they have an obligation? Don't Democrats just get up on the floor of the Senate and go, you guys have an obligation of, don't you see the color of her skin? You have an, doesn't matter how crazy she is. It doesn't matter what she believes. It doesn't matter how, you know, one of these judges, I don't even know which one. I don't even care. That's how little I care about this, because it's not going to change the dynamic on the court. But one of these judges has a near perfect record of being overturned in the D.C. Circuit by the higher court, meaning the decisions that she's made have been wildly wrong legally, according to other legal scholars. Why would she be on this list? Well, because have you not noticed her, which bathroom she goes into and what the color of her skin is? That's why. And that's the perverse nature of what Joe Biden did by announcing, I'm only going to do this. I'm only going to vote for that. Well, that's terrible. That's stupid. That's damaging. It's anti-American. Yeah, but still. What do you mean, yeah, but still? Anyway, I can see Republicans, I see a path forward for Republicans where they just do really, really well with this. And then I see what Republicans, because that's what Republicans could do. And then I see what I suspect Republicans will do. And it won't be anything of the sort. It'll be wildly stupid. It will be, I'm going to grandstand, I'm going to raise money, go to stop so-and-so and such or whoever it is, .com, donate to my campaign, we'll stop them. Just so you know, when you get those emails, and you'll get those emails, any Republican who promises that they will stop or they need your money, and if you donate to them or their cause or their group or whatever, then they will be able to stop Joe Biden's nominee. They're lying. They're wrong. The only way to stop Joe Biden's nominee is a Democrat. Period. End of story. Those are the rules. Those are the breaks. Time magazine actually had a piece this morning, and it was kind of funny because it just shows how out of touch the media is. And it was about how Republicans, the title was How Republicans Can Stop Joe Biden's Nominee. They had to go and change the title. They changed the title to Biden Senate Democrats Can Replace Justice Stephen Breyer on Party Lines. It's the exact opposite of what they said originally. And then at the very beginning, it's by somebody called Philip Elliott. It was originally posted on the 26th at 1:55 p.m. It was updated. Good Lord, it took them that long to figure this out. It was updated at 11:29 p.m. So it took them 10 hours to sit there and figure out Senate rules that are, when it comes to nominees, it's majority, there's no filibuster. How dumb do you have to be? But at the top of this editor's note, the original version of this story incorrectly stated that Republicans could use Senate rules to block a Biden Supreme Court nomination. It was based on the author's incorrect analysis of a May 13, 2021 Congressional Research Service report. The Senate will require a majority of votes to approve Justice Stephen Breyer's replacement, not 60 votes. I don't know who Philip Elliott is, but did you not live during the Trump administration? Did you not live during the Obama administration? If you're going to write the news or write about the news or comment on the news, you should probably follow the news. You should be basically aware, the 30,000-foot level. You don't have to know which Senate rules were changed, what numbers they were, and how procedurally it went down, but you should be aware. This is comically bad. It's pathetic, really. It's not surprising. It's pathetic. So as you watch coverage of this, and I'm sure this will be a big story through the whole weekend, as you watch coverage of this, recognize that the people that are giving you definitive answers, that people, I mean, this guy works for Time Magazine. Let me see, click on him and see what his bio. Philip Elliott is a Washington course. Good God, he's Washington correspondent for Time Magazine. Now listen to this, guys. This guy got the basic, most basic thing wrong. The most basic thing wrong. Philip Elliott is a Washington correspondent for Time, meaning he's on the payroll. Before joining Time in early 2015, which means he's been at this for a while, he spent almost a decade, holy Frank Tanana, he's really been at this a while, at the Associated Press, where he covered politics, campaign finance, education, and the White House. He's a graduate of the E.W. Scripps School of Journalism at Ohio University. I bet they're sitting there today going, can we get that? We don't want every alum to acknowledge that they went here. This guy's been in the business for, by my count, probably 20 years. And he doesn't know that the Senate is, years ago, gotten rid of the 60-vote threshold for filibustering for nominees for the Supreme Court. Nominees for anything. It's unbelievable. So as you watch these clowns on TV this weekend, first of all, I would admonish you, do not watch news this weekend. Don't watch any news this weekend. Don't turn it on. Turn it all off. Find something enjoyable. Find something entertaining to watch or don't watch anything. Read a book. Go out and do some yard work or do something outside. Get away from the news for the weekend. Your body will thank you. Your mind will thank you. Your sanity will thank you. But if you do catch any of it, it will be about this. By, I'd say 90% of it, especially the Sunday shows, will be about this. Recognize that just because somebody is credentialed, because somebody works for a once prestigious outlet like Time Magazine or NBC News or what have you, you name your choice, that doesn't mean they know what the hell they're talking about. In fact, it just means the opposite in a lot of cases, because these people, something goes wrong in the brain when these people are out there. They go in the opposite direction, the 100% opposite direction, just because they start to believe that they know what they're talking about. And they aren't about to bother doing any research because they think they've got this stuff inherently. So the people you see on television speaking the most assuredly are generally the people who know the least. But you just, if you say it with confidence, my God, you'll get a contributor deal. It's a joke. I'm looking at, what is this? We got the Olympics, I think, starting next week or soon after. I'm seeing a story about that. And then this can't be. Good Lord. McDonald's menu. Okay, it's a hack, maybe. No, maybe not. McDonald's is adding some menu hacks to its official menu items. Starting January 31st, 2020, several menu hacks will become official items you can order. I'm looking at these things, and I'll tell you what they are. See. Are you ready for the land, air, and sea? It combines a Big Mac, a McChicken, and a Filet-O-Fish into one giant sandwich. And there it is. There's a picture in all its glory. They even use the middle bun for the Big Mac. I think we could be forgiven if we got rid of that middle bun thing. Don't you? It's just a pile of cow, chicken. Chickens don't really fly, though, so I'm not really sure about the air part, but I like the name. Now, of course, this, what is this? Why don't you just call it the McStroke? Just call it the McStroke. There you go. Get ready for a full day's worth of calories if you eat them. They're also going to have one. What is that? What's the other one? It's just a Big Mac. Looks like a Big Mac or maybe a double quarter pounder with cheese with a fillet of fish on it. If you don't want to go for the air, it's called Surf and Turf. In the middle of a fillet of fish in the middle of a double cheeseburger. That's not bad. But again, they got the middle bun in. There's no middle bun in a double cheeseburger. Get rid of the middle bun. Carbs. Of course, if you're counting carbs, you're not going to eat this crap anyway. It says, get ready for a, this is from Fox 5, by the way, fox5ny.com. Get ready for a full day's worth of calories if you eat that item. The McDonald's website nutrition calculator shows that if you combine all the ingredients of those three sandwiches, it's 1,330 calories with 69 grams of total fat, 124 grams of carbohydrates, and 19 grams of sugar. You sit there and you go, how the hell do you get sugar? There's beef, cow, or cow, I guess is beef. Beef, chicken, and fish. Where do you get the sugar from? Ladies and gentlemen, you have no idea how much sugar is hidden in all the crap you eat. McDonald's French fries, I believe, have a big component. Part of them is sugar. The pictured sandwich does not use three slices of bread that the individual, or does not use the three slices the individual sandwich would use, so the total is a little lower. I guess, but no, there's a third slice in there. It's just that if you got another sandwich, there'd be three more slices of bread. And if you're worried about salt, this is where it's like the mixed stroke. 2,150 milligrams of sodium for those sandwiches. The Surf and Turf is a filet of fish sandwich out of the middle of a double cheese. I love the double cheeseburger. I love the double cheeseburger. Back when they were 99 cents and I was broke, I lived on double cheeseburgers back in Michigan, back in college. It was 99 cents for a double cheese. You get two double cheeseburgers for $2. It was glorious. I never once, in all the hundreds I'd eaten over those years, never once did I say, you know what this needs? Tartar sauce and fish. Never once. I think back on it. No, I'd eaten it in altered states, too. I never once said, you know what this really needs is something else. Because it was perfection. It was that, I've opined about this before, but that coagulated cheese. It's not melted. It's just made soft. And then it rehardens. You got to peel it off the, something about, maybe it's just a special type of American, maybe it's the sugar, the American cheese that McDonald's uses. I miss the heat lamp McDonald's, because now they put all this stuff together fresh, and the cheese doesn't have the opportunity to semi-melt, get soft, and droop around the burger, and then harden again. And for some reason, just that little bitty bit of science, or whatever it is, causes that cheese to absorb some flavor from the onions, and absorb some flavor from the burger. I'm making myself hungry. Making myself hungry for something that doesn't exist anymore. Sad. The crunchy double combines a double cheeseburger with a bed of chicken nuggets covered in tangy barbecue sauce. So they got even more. Crunchy double. Double cheeseburger and a bed of chicken nuggets with barbecue sauce. Again, never thought that double cheeseburger needed anything. The breakfast has its own hack. The hash brown McMuffin is what you'd expect it to be. A hash brown alongside or inside a sausage McMuffin. Why don't you just make the hash browns round and replace the muffin with hash brown? You don't have to add it. The hash browns are great. They bring that salt, probably, God knows, 1,500 milligrams of salt. But they bring that salt to it. You replace the buns, the English muffin with that. There's your hack, but they won't do that. While you can order the menu hacks by name, you will actually have to build the sandwich yourself. For example, if you order the Surf and Turf, you will be given the Filet-O-Fish sandwich and a double cheeseburger in your bag. You will have to unwrap them and then put them together yourself. But they're not acting. Why are they putting them on the menu? You got to do. McDonald's warns that the menu hack items will only be available to order by name for a limited time. Otherwise, you're just going to have to order them separately, which are going to be delivered to you separately anyway. This is great on behalf of McDonald's as far as them being able to get PR out of nothing. But come on, man. Only for a limited time. Only for a limited time. So if you go back after the expiration, you go, I want a McChicken, I want a Big Mac, and I want a Filet-O-Fish. Is somebody going to come on there?
Excuse me, sir. Are you trying to order the land, air, and sea? We cannot sanction that anymore. No, no, no. We're going to refuse you the Filet-O-Fish.
I don't think so. Good God. But it's still interesting. We find new and creative ways to kill ourselves. We got an obesity problem. We got a pandemic that disproportionately impacts the obese. But here's 1,500 calories before you even get out of bed. And let's slather on another 500 calories in sauce. It'll be great. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Get your McStroke now with your McAngioplasty at the end of the drive-thru. Please drive through and die. I'm going to shift gears here to COVID. Because there is a good thing about, well, the bad thing about being the United States is we used to be the world leader and now we're not anymore in lots of ways. The good thing is at least there are other countries willing to step up. Imagine if the entire world was frozen in fear. Because the United States is either frozen in fear or ruled by Karens, or because the Democrats think that they can get some political mileage out of any of those emotions. And so they just run along with it and keep the country down, keep damaging the country for their own political gain. And that would then have a ripple effect across the world. It's weird because the White House says, oh, you know, I hear Ginger Goebbels and all these people are saying, I hear from world leaders. Even Kamala Harris said this last week. I hear from world leaders who say, what's going on with democracy in America? You set the example for the world and what's going on? Shut up. You don't get the world leader. Macron's not calling you going, what's going on? I was thinking about holding an election, but now that I see that the United States is passing laws that require people to show photo ID, I'm thinking democracy is over. But the world does look to us for leadership and other things, and we're not getting it, particularly on COVID. If you want to see leadership on COVID, you have to look elsewhere. And ironically, it's usually in the place now where the the left points for their socialism, Denmark, Sweden, things like that. And I said, we should be like Sweden. We should be like the Nordic countries. The socialists and the democratic socialists. And every time Bernie Sanders says that, what do you get? The ambassador from Sweden or the Sweden premier? We're not socialists. We're not. Stop calling us socialists. We're not socialists. Socialism sucks. But Bernie keeps going on talking about how they're socialists. They're this kind of democratic socialists we need, despite what they say. But Bernie was the type of guy who got a little handsy on dates. Don't tell me that you don't want this. Don't tell me you don't want this. You know you want this. Look at me. I'm a hunk of a man. Don't you know? Don't you know you want this? I'm a big hunk of a man. You know you want me. You know you do. Come on. Anyway, now we can look to another country when it comes to COVID. Thank God that other countries are out there when it comes to COVID. They are trying things. They're using monoclonal antibodies significantly more frequently in other countries, for example. We create the technology and the rest of the world embraces them because the use of, say, monoclonal antibodies on a wide scale would not benefit Democrats politically, so they poo-poo the idea. Now comes this out of Denmark. Newsweek reports, Denmark Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen, I find a really weird way to spell Frederiksen, but that's how it's pronounced, announced on January 26th Denmark would be throwing out most of the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions it placed, including mask mandates. Denmark's going back to normal, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to go on a vacation, do you go on that European vacation and you don't mind 90% of the food being about fish, go to Denmark. Restrictions currently in place are for the public to wear masks on public transportation, in restaurants and shops, and people entering healthcare facilities and retirement homes, according to the Associated Press. However, following the February 1st change of restrictions, masks will only be required in hospitals, healthcare facilities, and homes for the elderly. Honestly, those are the places you want them under normal circumstances. Maybe not the homes for the elderly, although, you know, an N95 mask, a good fitted N95 mask can stop you from getting spittle out on anybody and can prevent them from getting sick. But in hospitals and in healthcare facilities, you don't want to be walking around running your hands along the wall, touching every surface and doorknob, and then licking your fingers anyway. So a mask there makes more sense. Plus, you'd have people who are susceptible to infection there. People with depressed or suppressed immune systems, for example. It makes sense there. Plus, it's largely voluntary that you would go to those places. So this is actually a massive step in the right direction. Will the rest of the world take note and follow? Probably not. Probably not. According to Health Minister Magnus Hoinkage, I'm not even going to be able to pronounce that last one. I just remember Magnus. I can't believe that people are actually named Magnus. I just remember the late night ESPN back in the 90s and early 2000s where Magnus for Magnussen. There's always at least seven Magnuses in the world's strongest man competitions picking up the Volkswagen and throwing the kegs of beer or whatever. His Denmark's recent cases of COVID-19 were more than 46,000 daily on average. However, only 40 people are in hospital intensive care units. Quote, we continue with a strong epidemic surveillance, said Magnus, according to the Associated Press. Then we can react quickly if necessary. Despite a lift of all restrictions, Frederiksen warned, there could be a rise in infections, which may lead to a fourth vaccination shot being necessary. Quote, it may seem strange that we want to remove restrictions given the high infection rates, but fewer people will become seriously ill. Denmark was one of the first European countries in 2020 to close schools and send employees home due to the pandemic, which they later said was a huge mistake. A huge mistake. Unfortunately, in this country, we haven't learned that that was a huge mistake, to go about those sorts of things, to get in that panic mode. It was a huge mistake that many places are still engaging in. Flint, Michigan, told you about the other day, they have gone to distance learning, as they say it, indefinitely. indefinitely they'll have distance learning. Why? No particular reason, just COVID. Just COVID. Is there a spike in deaths in Flint, Michigan? No. Is there a spike in deaths in Michigan? No. The number of cases in Michigan certainly isn't particularly good. They've been going up for a while. They're starting to tick down a little bit, but they may have peaked. We don't know. But, as like everywhere else, where there have been an increase in cases, there was no corresponding increase in the number of deaths. That's the most important unit of measure. What is the likelihood that you will die should you get this thing? If it is next to nothing, then you have to go back to going about your business. You just have to. But going about your business, going back to going about your business, doesn't help Democrats. It doesn't serve their purposes. So they have largely ignored that. I've illustrated that time and time again on this program, that the number of infections has gone up 5, 10, 8-fold, but the numbers of deaths have not gone up that same amount. For example, using the January 26th date, January 26, 2020, there were new cases of COVID-19. There were 686,136 new cases reported. 1 year prior, in 2021, on January the 26th, there were only 150,638 new cases. So it's about four or five times the number of new cases. But on January 26, 2021, there were 4,098 recorded deaths. On January 26, 2020, there were fully 1,200 fewer. 3,895 deaths. So 202, three fewer, if my math is correct. That's a significant drop. Five times the number of cases, one quarter fewer the number of deaths. Not good. Zero on both would be ideal, but if we're ever going to get to zero, we're going to have to work our way to zero, and it's going to have to happen naturally. But to pretend otherwise is stupid. To shut down your schools is stupid. To shut down everything, running around going, oh my goodness, only distance shop, stock up on toilet paper, look out, they're coming to get you, is wildly stupid. But it also benefits one political party quite a bit. Quite a bit. You can find every single day, it seems, some new leftist video of somebody, some late night comedian, talking about how people are all dying because of COVID and we need to continue to restrict things because of COVID. And you're like, okay, well, we've done all this stuff. It hasn't made much of a difference. This is what I mean by leadership or lack of leadership on behalf of the United States. The Democrats, this White House, are never going to say, all right, we need a different approach because this approach isn't working. The president has literally been advised that we need a different approach because this approach isn't working. And they have decided not to do that. They insist. No, don't worry. The vaccine still works against Omicron, but somehow, weirdly, the antibodies, the monoclonal antibodies that worked against Delta, and I don't think there's any doubt really that the shot did a good job, not perfect, but a good job against Delta. But they're saying, oh, the shot that did so well against Delta, the monoclonal antibodies that did so well against Delta, they don't do anything for Omicron. In fact, they probably make it worse because there are side effects. They forget all the side effects with the shot, but that's beside the point. I find it weird that a vaccine that would help you do better against Omicron, or that help you do better against Delta, that an antibody that did the exact same thing wouldn't have the same impact. So if somehow the shot works for Omicron, but the antibodies don't, so they're discontinuing most of the antibodies, not all of them, but most of them, to try and pressure more people to get the shot. That's what I would believe. That's what I do believe, is they're looking at it and they're saying there's probably a drop-off in efficacy, but there's also a significant drop off in severity. So they saw this as a risk worth taking. They can just say, hey, we've got a problem. We need to get more people shots. Let's cut off some of the treatment options. The pill, the Pfizer pill, the treatment pill, that's hard to come by. As Joe Biden ridiculously said, it takes months to make one pill. No. But they don't want you to have that pill because they want you to have the shot. They've pot committed. If they come out now and say, all right, you don't need to get the shot, we have an effective treatment, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be pissed off because they will have gotten the shot expressly because they basically were assured that that was the key to getting out of this thing. They were made, promises were made. They've also conditioned so many Americans to hate people who haven't gotten the shot, which is sick, which is wrong, which is what Democrats do. But they've conditioned so many people to be angry and hate the people who haven't gotten the shot that to let them off the hook, I think, would be politically demoralizing to people, to be honest with you. I think that the leftists would go, wait a second, what do you mean you don't have to get the shot anymore? I have been telling people that those evil Trump supporters, which are majority black, but that's beside the point, are evil. And now you're telling me it's okay, or that they were right, or that I didn't have to get the shot. I could have just waited this out, that I didn't have to get my 7-year-old injections. I could have just waited this out. There's a story there this morning. Let me see if I can find this. President Fauci. He was going to turn everybody into a damn pincushion. Yeah, New York Post. Fauci says children younger than 4 will get 3 doses of COVID vaccines. No, they won't. The White House said Wednesday that the COVID-19 vaccine regimen for kids younger than 4 years old will likely be 3 doses when it's approved, and vowed to make millions more hard-to-find Pfizer antiviral pills available in the coming months. The coming months. 2 clinical trials of the Pfizer vaccine on children ages 6 months to 2 years old. Who's letting their kids sign up for this? And ages 2 to 4 are underway, but the older group hasn't yet met standards. White House Chief Medical Advisor Anthony Fauci said at a press conference, quote, doses and regimen for children 6 months to 24 months worked well, but it turned out that the other group from 24 months to 4 years old did not yet reach the level of non-inferiority. So the studies are continued. They're just going to keep filling. Why not just remove all the blood from children and replace it with vaccine? That seems to be what this ghoul, the only thing that's going to make this ghoul be happy. You know what? They just walk around and you, if you cut yourself, you're going to be leaking vaccine. That's the way it is. It looks like, he says, a 3-dose regimen. I don't think we can predict when we'll see it approved, he said. Hopefully never. If you needed a reason to homeschool your kids or put your kids in a private school or just get your kids out of public school one way or another, there you go. Never put them in the first place. These people are nuts. Nuts. In other news, there's big news up in Jeopardy. Big news up in Jeopardy. The all-time winningest female. You know that dude? Men make the best women. She finally lost. Amy Schneider. It's a dude. I mean, come on. It just reminds me of that Austin Powers thing. Lost to another dude whose name, Roan something or other. Doesn't matter what his name is. Roan Talsman, I guess. It's all big news everywhere. The media is going crazy. Oh, my goodness. Amy Schneider. She lost. She won like $1.38 million, and good. But she lost to the better man. The better man won. The guy who doesn't spend a whole lot of time tucking it back. Amy Schneider's Jeopardy winning streak has finally come to an end. Last week, the 42-year-old made history when she won her 39th game and became number 2 in the game show's consecutive win list and the winningest woman. He's a dude. You won the silver. How long are you going to dine out on it? Even Nancy Kerrigan doesn't dine out on her silver. But her time at the top ended Wednesday when she lost to Roan Talsman, a librarian from Chicago. Talsman scored $29,600, while Schneider finished in second place with $19,600. Talsman was sitting pretty after he hit a daily double late in Jeopardy, blah, 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 and raised a lot of money. Final Jeopardy category was Countries of the World. The answer read, the only nation in the world whose name in English ends with an H and is also one of the 10 most populous. The question was, what is Bangladesh? Well, Roan got it. I don't know what the dude came up with, but it doesn't even matter. Who cares? That they're sitting there celebrating this. As if it's, oh my goodness, this woman, no. You want to say that she's a trans woman, add that qualifier. You have what? You have Joe Biden at the beginning of the show saying, we're going to nominate a black woman. Okay, you're cheapening it. But they think that they're actually making it better somehow by going, oh, we got the first woman here making the most money on Jeopardy, and it's a dude. And when they do it, what's a trans, the first trans woman? And trans women are women. They always have to throw in that lecture. Even the conservative-leaning New York Post, they have to throw in that, but, you know, it's a dude, but don't say it's a dude because that's wrong and that'll be wrong and you'll get in trouble for doing that and you'll be canceled. Can we all just get over this crap? I don't care how Schneider wants to live his life, but he's a dude, okay? There is no time in all of Schneider's years, I don't know when Schneider transitioned or if he transitioned or had the surgery or whatever, but I can guarantee you this. Amy Schneider will never in a million years have to worry about ovarian cancer. It's just not an issue. Prostate cancer? Yeah, probably. Probably going to have to get checked for that. But that's the difference. If you want to play dress up and you want to be called Amy instead of whatever, Earl, whatever your name is, I don't know what your name was. I don't care what your name was. I'm all for it. I'll call you Amy. I don't care. The problem is that you insist that not only do I call you Amy, which I have no problem with, but that I pretend that you should be concerned vehemently, very worried, lose sleep over the fact that you could get cervical cancer, that you could get ovarian cancer. You can't. It will never be an issue for you. So while you can live your life, and I couldn't care less how you live your life, you want to draw me into that delusional world and force me to live in that delusional world. That's where you lose me. That's where you'll lose me forever, forever in a day. So, yeah, you are not the all-time winningest woman in Jeopardy history. You are the second all-time winningest contestant on Jeopardy. I couldn't care less about anything else about you. And actually, I don't give a damn about that either. I just don't. All right, before we run out of time here, I've got to play this Joe Biden audio that's making the rounds because we could do a contest in and of itself. Like, what in the hell is Joe Biden trying to say? You should have, you know how, what was his name? Reggie Love. Barack Obama had a guy called Reggie Love. He was Joe Biden's body man. Was with him everywhere. Pretended to suck at basketball so Barack Obama could beat him and everything. They were always together. Together more often than Barry was with Michelle. Called the body. He didn't bring anything else to the table except, like, he's going to be your gopher. Wasn't sought after advice. Might have had clearance, but only because he wanted to be in the room because Barry wanted him near for whatever reason. Seems a bit weird to me, but whatever. Barry had his body man. Joe needs his body man. Joe needs his body man to just come up and poke him in the ribs every once in a while and say, all right, that's enough, dude. Stop. Stop. Stop what? Just stop talking. That should be the code. You just walk by, poke him in the ribs, stop, and he goes on. Yesterday in an event with CEOs, the Ford CEO was there too. Joe started talking and recounting the time that he went to Dearborn, Michigan, where I used to live. There's the Ford Proving Grounds, a big wall around it. Every once in a while you see somebody in a on a ladder, a stepladder, looking over some reporter from one of the magazines trying to take pictures of some concept car or whatever. Joe drove an electric vehicle out there. He was trying to recount that and say how amazing it was. It got Bidened. It got completely Bidened. What in the hell? It got so Bidened that I don't think you, a normal human being, can figure out what in the hell he's actually trying to say here. Figure it out for yourself.
But I might point out, you're, when I went to Dearborn driving that, you know, was up there. I don't know, man. I think the press thought I was crazy. I enjoyed it so much going up and your new EV factory and that Hummer.
What the hell is he talking about? What is he talking about? You know, I have heard people coming. I've been coming out of surgery and had more energy, had more clarity of thought than the president of the United States sitting in a room after no surgery. God knows what medicine he's on. But I've had more coherent conversations with people coming out of anesthetic than what Joe Biden had right there. You know, you got the, are we keeping you awake, Mr. President? I realize you scheduled this event for 3 p.m. and that's getting pretty close to night time. But for the love of God, somebody, maybe his body man come out and not only poke him in the ribs and shut him up, his body man come out and give him just a little bump of cocaine. Like, oh, there you go. Now we're ready to go. Maybe just make the body man Hunter. Hunter, it wouldn't pay well enough for Hunter. He needs big, big, big money. He needs Chinese communist money. Those damn Chinese communists. Anyway, that is all the time we have for this week, during the weekdays anyway. There is the Curse Program at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, a week in effing review, available for all at a low, low price of $5 a month. $5 a month, 4 to 5 shows per month, plus all sorts of other things. And you get to enter the contest. Don't forget to enter to win a signed book by either Charlie Hurt or Debbie Harry. Debbie Harry, Charlie Hurt, you decide. The rules are posted there in the post. Just look for the pictures of the books, the autographs, and you get that. And at midnight, look for the Week in Effin review. I suspect the Supreme Court is going to play a role in this week's Effin review. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Otherwise, we'll see you back here on Monday. Thanks for listening. Have a great one.